Welcome to the Generation Iron Podcast, featuring the biggest names in bodybuilding, fitness, combat, and strength sports world.
If you want to be a bodybuilding champion, it takes hours and hours every day of being dedicated and being passionate about it.
How's your boy here, Kai Green, a.k.a. Mr. Getting It Done?
Yeah, buddy!
Tune in to the GI Exclusives on the Generation Iron Airwaves.
All right, we're back with a new episode of Generation Iron Podcast. Today, we're talking to one of the top coaches in fitness and bodybuilding. He's responsible for the victory of Sean Roden at the Olympia 2018. And today, he's here talking to us about what happened behind the scenes, what transpired after, and what he's currently working on right now. We're also going to talk about specific methods of training, his style of coaching, the do's and the don'ts, and everything else about fitness and bodybuilding. Today we're talking to Chris Lewis, aka Psycho Fitness. So I know you've been in the industry for a while, man, but I remember I started hearing your name, Psycho Fitness, a couple of years ago. You know, it started coming up more and more, and then I found out you work with Sean Roden and a bunch of other people, man. But for those who don't know, can you tell me a little bit about your background and also how you got into the industry?
Well, okay, how I got into the industry of actually competing myself, I was a nationally qualified competitor back in 2002, 2000, but I was just a guy that loved working out. I worked in construction. I love transforming things. I love working on old cars. And then I knew nothing of fitness, and I went to a bodybuilding show with somebody from the gym, and this opened this whole world to me, and I instantly wanted to be this person that transformed bodies. So I started doing that, man, in the early 90s. That's how I got into the business, just going to shows and helping people out in the gym. This is before gurus. This is before prep coaches, anything like that. Just me helping people in the gym, getting ready for contests, prep.
But you became a guru, basically, right? You build up your reputation little by little, and now you're considered to be one of the top guys.
Well, I was fortunate enough to train with people like Chris Cormier, Flex Wheeler, Paul DeLette. Those guys took me under their wing, and I learned a lot of techniques from them. They taught me a lot of things, and then that ended up falling me becoming a guru and a prep coach and a personal trainer and things like that. So I didn't work out, like, plan to do that. It just kind of fell in my lap.
And why the name Psycho Fitness, man? Are you crazy or what?
I'm nuts. It's still, you know, when you have different friends and these friends don't know each other and they always go, damn, you're pretty psycho or you're pretty crazy. Sometimes it's better just to adopt it instead of running from it. But that's the name I had ever since I was a kid. And I was a young kid. I memorized all the words to Psycho the movie, 1, 2, and 3. Oh, so man. I was the kind of kid that would repeat these lines from the movie over and over and over again. And then that's how it started with my family, then the neighborhood, and then everybody. So it's Psycho Fitness. It just all came together, and I just adopted it. It's just a nickname that stuck with me.
That's interesting, man. But so you mentioned you used to compete a little bit yourself, right? You used to compete on. You became a pro, right, or no?
No, I never even tried to go for my pro card. Basically, the only reason I competed that Flex Wheeler told me I had to compete. Because I was around these guys, and these guys were already pro when I met them. They were climbing up, and I remember Flex said, "When are you going to compete?" And I said, "I don't want to compete." He goes, "No, we compete around here, and we win shows." So that kind of led into me competing a few times, and then it makes me actually me helping those guys get ready for their shows as a form of a training partner, not a coach or a trainer.
That's interesting. You know, they say, like, the good coaches, they were kind of like athletes. They didn't become good athletes, basically, and a good athlete would never be able to be a coach. Like, I hear that in boxing that happens. Is that so? It seems to be the truth, like, because, you know, you weren't really a serious athlete yourself, but you became one of the top coaches in the game later. You know what I mean?
Well, that is true. Because, like this, when you have a guru and he's sending you the protocol, the diet, and then you have a trainer, most of the greats in bodybuilding, they just do what they're told. They just do what they're told. You eat this much rice, do this much cardio. They're not saying why. They're just executing this to the fullest. So when you go ask them, "Hey, man, how'd you get in great shape?" They go, "I don't know. Talk to the coach. I don't know. I wasn't thinking like that." But sometimes we fall into these genres. I really blame my training partners why I became pro, because, you know, I was around the best in the world. these are high caliber bodybuilders. So people think, well, why do you turn pro? Because it was deflated seeing Flex Miller walk in the gym. That didn't give you hope. It kind of diluted your hope. You know, it's like working under Bill Gates and seeing his bank account and you work at the post office. It's not going to inspire you. It's going to deflate you. Seeing Chris Cormier transform, that doesn't inspire you. It inflates you because these guys were so genetically gifted and they worked hard. So I instantly fell into the line of partner. I never trained those guys. I worked out with those guys. I was never their trainer. That's another thing that people think, that I trained them. I never trained them. I was always their training partner.
So who are some of your clients, the clients that you've trained over the years that people might recognize?
I've had plenty of clients. Hide Yamaguchi, of course, Dexter Jackson, Sean Roden, Regan Grimes. I mean, everybody's came in for a few sessions, but those are the guys that I train for a whole prep period or a length of time that I train them. And I still train some people that people don't know about. We kind of keep it on the hush.
So what is your approach to training? And also, I mean, as a guru, right, do you help them with training, nutrition? Like, what kind of, like, areas do you cover?
So people, let's get this to understand. A coach, this guy does the whole program. He writes up the program. He tells you the protocol. He tells you all the supplements, how much water, everything. He does that, and he basically sits behind a computer screen like I am now, and he directs you into this victory. Now, a trainer, this guy is in the gym, on the gym floor with you daily, basically executing that program. So in some forms, I'm a guru, and other times I was a trainer. So those top guys that I list, I was their trainer, not their guru. So I was a trainer to some night. So my approach is, to answer your question, my approach is everybody's different. So my name is Psycho Fitness. So Psycho Fitness means where the mind and body meets. So you have to get inside that person's mind, and you have to let this, you have to make this person believe that they can lift that weight, that they can work out for 2 hours, that they can do all the cardio schedule, that they can get the chicken down. Once you get them to believe that, now you just monitor the program that they executed. Now the program is different for everybody, but it's all the same. And meaning my thing is like not making them do it. My thing is helping them believe that they can do it, or making them believe that they can do it. Because if the guy has to eat 12 ounces of chicken for 6 or 7 meals, if he doesn't believe he can do it, he's not going to do it. If you get to put the 150-pound dumbbells on him and he doesn't believe it, it's not going to happen. So the trainer always has to believe this process and then make the client believe that they can execute it. And once that, it's pretty easy after that point.
What if a client comes to you, right, and he has all the willpower in the world, you know what I mean? He dreams to be a Mr. Olympia, but you look at him and you don't believe it. I mean, do you tell him honestly that it's not going to happen, or what do you tell him in a situation like this?
Well, see, with me, that's a good question, because with myself, anybody I train, I believe in their goal. So if this guy says, I want to be Mr. Olympia, and you see me training him, I don't care what he looks like. That guy is going to become Mr. Olympia if he follows the program. Two human beings with the same thing in mind, constantly putting forth effort to execute something, that's a problem. That's a problem. When one person doing it, like, because that type of belief gets infectious, and then the girlfriend believes it, and then the training partner believes it, then the friends believe it. Now you have this influx of people believing this common goal, and that's how you create a champion. You have to convince the client that they believe it. And now if the guy comes to me and he doesn't believe it, he's just talking, I can sense that right away, because I've been around nothing but champions my whole life or in this industry, so I can sense it. But if I take him on, I truly believe he's going to turn pro, or he's going to win the Night of Champions, or he's going to win the Olympia. I totally believe it.
What's happening right now with the whole coronavirus, the quarantine? I mean, how you continue your work with the clients? What's happening exactly? Because everybody has to be sitting home for the most part.
Right. Well, primarily when I was kicked out of Goals, I was only in the gym for maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. And those were my clients, my online clients that would come in and trying to peak for shows, or my online clients that would come in and trying to get to their next level. I really wasn't in the gym 10, 12 hours like I was before. So this really didn't affect me as much. You know, I'm in my garage. I work out in here. And this right now, I got 3 computer screens right in front of me. And this is where I do all my online dieting. So the quarantine really didn't affect me as much.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're talking about being a guru, right? As far as, you know, being a guru. I mean, there's a lot of gurus right now in bodybuilding, right? And a lot of them, for some reason, getting a very bad rap, you know, is like they either get accused of getting people ripped off, or in many cases, you know what I'm saying, they say that they're actually hurting their clients health-wise.
Right.
Why is it they're getting a lot of bad? I'm not picking anybody specifically, but why is this happening, right, anything overall?
Well, I think a lot of competitors, they may work with a top guru. I get this myself. I get a lot of competitors. They may work with me for a season or maybe a couple of years. And then I see on the Instagram, they do contest prep. Just because you can read a program doesn't mean you can do a program. Now, I could learn all the words to Run DMC's raps, all of their raps. I can learn all the words. But if you say, here, Chris, write a Run DMC rap, I can't write a rap. I'm just regurgitating bits of that song and bits of that song and bits of that song. So I think you got a lot of people out there that call themselves gurus because they've worked with a top guru and they got a sense of what's going on, but it doesn't work like that. The two things with a guru. Not only do you have to know, you can look at the problem. Now you look at the client and you see they're holding water. You see it. We all see the water. Which route we take to eliminate that water, that's the hard part. So you gotta find your problem and take the best route to fix the problem while keeping the size or not losing body parts or not hurting the person. And that right there is a skill that takes that you can't be taught. Like you have to have an eye for it. What's water? What fat? What's flat? What's whatever? You have to know that. So I think a lot of people jump into the sport or jump into as a guru and they're just regurgitating what they saw in their program.
So what should a bodybuilder be looking for when he's looking for a guru, right? Is it just based on reputation, like word of mouth? Like how does he know if you're a good guru or not? You know what I'm saying? Based on your reputation, basically. That's the only way to find out, right?
Well, I mean, you should reach out to the clients. You should reach out to the clients and you should say, hey, send me 15 before and afters. You know, what round? You can bet a guru in about 10 minutes. You go to his Instagram, you see the hashtags, you know, you follow the people down. Hey, I work with this guy. How long you work with him? What are you looking for? And you get the information. Unfortunately, a lot of people pick gurus based on their reputation that they're a good guru. Now, this guru may have 200 clients, and 20 of them may look good. What about the other 190 that look shitty? What about those? Of course, if I throw you the ball in a football game, you know, every time, eventually you will score a touchdown. But how many times did you have that? You have to understand that. You know, so pick a guru based on his work, not because he has a million Instagram followers or he's going to tag you and stuff like that. Unfortunately, that's how people pick gurus now, based on their popularity.
Social media, right? So do you think a guru should be held responsible for the health of a bodybuilder that they coaching at the moment?
Oh, of course, I do. Now, with that being said is this. A person may subscribe a protocol. And it may say, hey, take one red pill every other day. And this bodybuilder, he takes the one red pill every other day. And he goes, hey, man, it's working great. I take the one red pill every day. Hey, can we bump it up to every day? No. Don't bump it up to every day. Leave it right there at one every day. You know, I don't want to, you know, tax you too much. Are you sure? I'm phenomenal. I feel great. I think I can handle it. No, leave it right there. Now, sometimes that client, he may drop that red pill every other day and not tell the guru. And that's where a relationship comes into play. You really have to have a relationship with your clients to know that they're not doing that, because along the line, you may say, hey, drop this green pill every other day, and this guy's taking two blue pills, now we have an issue. And it falls on the client. So that's why you have to have this relationship, not just sending out a protocol, but following up and making sure this guy is actually following and executing the protocol. So the internet has been a good thing. It's good in some ways because we have knowledge right on our phone. We can look up anything and we can look up stats and stuff like that. But sometimes the internet can be a bad thing because you give somebody a little information and they think they have a lot of information based on the chat rooms and the boards and stuff like that. So you have to have a relationship with your client to make sure they're executing the program the exact way that you want it.
Mm-hmm. So if the guy is not following your protocol 100%, you would drop him if you found out that he's not following it?
You have to drop him. Because eventually those blown kidneys or that death or that heart attack is gonna fall back on you. And also, too, when a client doesn't do well for a show, let's say you have a client and he doesn't do well for the show. He, you know, he takes third, but he really felt he should have won. And then he leaves you. He doesn't say, oh, I worked with Chris, but I didn't do the cardio. I didn't eat my meal six. I was doing egg whites when he told me to do steak. Blah. He doesn't tell you that part. He just says it didn't work out with him. He never tells what he did or didn't do. He only tells what he wants people to hear. He never tells, well, he gave me the thing, it was perfect, but I executed it differently. Like, as an analogy. So I don't know if you know anything about basketball, but when Shaq was with the Lakers, they kept telling Shaq, hey, lose 30 pounds. Hey, Shaq, work on your free throws. Hey, Shaq, get your, he had a bad ankle or a bad foot, get it fixed. And he refused to do it. So they traded him over to Miami. And guess what the first thing he did? He lost 30 pounds, he got his foot fixed, and he worked on it, and he won another ring. So whatever problems you have with this coach, you take with them to the other coach. So it's no. So that's what I'm saying.
It's interesting. I did a long interview with George Farah a couple of months back, and he had a, he went through cancer. He went through a lot of the, you know, and he's a very respectable coach, guru in the game, right? So in the interview, he said, you know, now that he's a little bit older, he kind of looked back in his career as a coach, and he regrets a lot of the stuff that he was doing with his clients. Primarily, he was talking about insulin. He was saying that, that he would never recommend it to anybody, you know, any of his clients. Now, I did an interview with Milos Sarsov, you know, is also a very popular guru. He's a great guy, too, and he was just saying that it's nonsense, you know. It's all about just doing it responsibly, knowledgeably. Now, do you have any say in this debate, like, as far as what is your opinion, like, between both of them?
Okay, all respect to George Farah. Of course, one of the great coaches that ever be in the game. He's also a pro bodybuilder. But insulin is a part of bodybuilding now. It's a part of it. So it's just like, it's like this with whitening teeth. Everybody is whitening their teeth, right? Everybody has these gleaming white teeth. But you have one guy that doesn't have them. You go, what's wrong with you? No, you guys have all changed. So it's like, if you're not doing the insulin, which some pros do not, some people don't need it, you, that look is a little bit different from the other bodybuilders, and you could stand out in a bad way. So insulin is a tool that a lot of bodybuilders use, that a lot of coaches use, and use the right way, it can have a really good effect. Milos is the expert of insulin. He's the expert. He knows how to use it. He knows how much to use. He knows. So somebody else with not the knowledge that he have, of course they may say, oh, it doesn't work or it's bad. Milos knows how to use insulin. He uses it extremely well, and he's always used extremely well.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as what recommendation, because a lot of the people that watch our programs, you know, they're basically aspiring bodybuilders, right? They want to get into the industry. They want to, you know, take it to the next level. What recommendation would you give to a teenager or a 21-year-old, whatever, right? Like, that wants to learn about bodybuilding and be responsible before they get into it, you know what I mean? Like, on a professional level. What's the right approach? Is it talking to a guy like you? Is it just doing research online? Like, what's the right way to go about it?
Well, what I did when I got into the sport, you know, I trained naturally for years. I trained clean for years and years. I mean, you know, if it wasn't from the local supplement store, I didn't take it. Like, I didn't take it. So you need to have a realistic idea of where you're starting and where you're going to end up. And second of all, you have to realize that these top 20 bodybuilders or fitness influencers in the world, not only may they be enhanced, but they're also genetically gifted. If you're not genetically gifted, you're not going to be a Phil Heath or a Sean Roden or a Big Ramy. You need both. You need hard work. You need talent. You need the mindset. And then I think the fourth or fifth on that list would be enhancement. But nowadays, these kids think enhancement is everything. Like, you, genetics doesn't come in a bottle. It doesn't. You're born with it. It's come from your mom or dad. It doesn't come in a bottle. And I think these kids think more is better and more is actually less.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Gold's Gym. So what happened to Gold's Gym? Did you get kicked out of Gold's Gym? Did you get banned from it? What exactly, what went down, man?
All of the above. I was kicked out and I was banned.
But you were there for many years, right? You were training Sean Roden there, right? And Stanimal, all those guys?
I have been there since the 90s. I was there actually since the 90s, and I was asked to leave and never to return. Well, you know, I've been asked this question many times, and if you go back and see my interviews, I say something different every time. And all depending on the day, how much truth I want to give you. The real story is this. So right now, you're a social media platform, right? You're huge on YouTube, and you're moving up. You're trying to move up, right? You want your platform to grow. But there are platforms above you that don't want you to grow. So you have to ask permission to move up in this world. I don't care if it's painting houses or stock market. At some point, you are asked to kiss the ring to move up. I don't kiss the ring. So what I did, I took Sean Roden when he was counted out. He had the broken jaw. He was as small as he ever been. And then I took Sean Roden, and all I needed was one ball to make a touchdown. That's all I needed was one ball. Sean Roden was that ball, but I didn't ask for permission. That's the people above me. Who's above me? Charles Glass. So let's do this. Let's have an interview where, because if I say it, I may get blasted. Who is above me at Charles Glass? Who is above me at Go's Gym? Who's a higher trainer than me?
Not much. Charles Glass. Well, I mean, the real question is, were you and Charles Glass training Sean Roden together? Because I thought it was like a joint effort, or was it? Because I don't know.
No. Well, the story was 2016, I was Sean Roden's training partner. I was his training partner in 2016, and he gained a lot of weight, a lot of muscle. He was pushed to the limits, and his body really responded. Now, I knew, and he took second that year. So when I came aboard, he went from third to second. 2017, that's when I became his trainer. He asked me to be his trainer.
By yourself?
By myself. Charles had nothing to do with the program whatsoever.
And until that point, it was Charles Glass training him.
Charles Glass and I was a training partner. So then 2017, I was the actual trainer, but Sean broke his jaw. He broke his jaw right before the Arnold. He don't know. He showed up one day. We lived in the same apartment building, not in the same apartment. I seen him from afar, and I looked, and I go, wow, that guy looks like Sean, but a little Sean. So Sean, he has a lot of brothers. I thought of one of his brothers. As I got closer, I realized it was Sean. This guy had lost like 50 pounds. I mean, he was 210, 215. I mean, small. And when I got up on him, I said, Sean, what happened? And it's obvious his jaw is wired shut. And so he slipped in the shower and he broke his jaw. So I don't care what someone tells you, drinking through a straw is not the same as eating a solid meal. It's not the same. And he whittled down to nothing. About 14 weeks off in Olympia, he had asked me to train him. We were training in a secret location, and we sent pictures, and I actually doubted myself. When I seen what he looked like, I actually doubted myself. I never doubt myself. And we sent pictures to Chris Aceto, and this guy's body just came right back. So we ended up like, let's say 210, 215, 260, 255 on stage, fifth in the world. So I knew with a full prep, we would win the Olympia. I had no doubt in my mind.
And next year, you guys won the Olympia.
Next year, we won the Olympia. So 16, training partner, second. We had the mishap in 17. Full, I'm the trainer. Chris Aceto is the coach. We walked through it. We won it.
So Chris was the just so I understand, but you were his trainer like in the gym, and then Chris was overlooking the process?
Well, Chris Aceto is the coach. What Chris does, he leads from the back. He doesn't demand, he doesn't yell. He'll lead you in the right direction. So we had this thing. I said, I tell you what, Chris, because Chris looked at pictures every day from 15 weeks out to all the way up to we drop him off in Vegas. He looks at pictures. So other coaches don't do that. So you might have a whole week or 7 days go by, and you can lose 10 pounds or you can lose a body part in those days. But Chris is not like that. He looks at the picture every day. So I could totally let myself go and train Sean really, really hard, knowing Chris could adjust at any time, any day, and fix it and catch up. So instead of me following the coach, Chris was actually letting me lead it, and he was making adjustments, and that's why Sean looked the way he did, the best he ever looked in his life. That's what happened. But it was Chris is actually the leader of the program. It's not me.
And Charles got upset because you replaced him in a gym being his trainer. Is that what happened?
What happened was, to go back, 2015, 2016, a lot of Charles's clients wanted me to become their trainer. You know, I do the old school type training, and basically the Gold's Gym that people go to see is not the Gold's Gym that is there now. That Gold's Gym has changed. It's watered down. It's diluted. It's not the same as it was. So I was one of the guys that were around doing that vintage type training, and they would come to me. And Charles is kind of like, which, you know, he's a great trainer, of course, but he's kind of like, you know, how can I say it? He's kind of morphed into a different style. I'm not saying it's worse, not saying it's better. It's just a different style to what the clients were expecting. And I, with my clients, I was doing that old school, gritty type, heavy, heavy training. I don't remember the last time I ever did an hour session. They're always 1:45, 1:30, 2 hours. So they were coming to me, but I would always turn them away out of respect for Charles. And I think Charles got a whiff of this, and he insulted me, which you never insult somebody named Psycho. You don't do that.
In your face or behind your back?
It was behind my back, but you understand, I looked at Charles. He was an icon. He was a mentor. He was one of my mentors in his sport. He's greatly respected, and for what he does, I greatly respect him. But he told me in this conversation that I couldn't take his clients, and if I did take his clients, I could not have them win the Olympia, and who was I to think so? So I said to him, I said, okay, we'll see about that. And that's what just got me angry. And I just laid everything I possibly could, and any client I could possibly get my hand on. I just went crazy with the training, crazy with the phone calls, crazy with the texts, crazy with the follow-up. And then that's when this cavalcade of clients started coming to me. So Charles didn't like that so much. And him and other top trainers in the gym, they got me removed from the gym. That's the truth. People can say it's not, or it's bullcrap, or this or that. They waited for a loophole and they got me out of the gym.
Interesting. So are you still training Sean Roden right now?
No, I haven't spoken to Sean. We spoke briefly through internet, but Instagram, but we haven't spoken in years.
Why did you guys split up?
I don't know. We never had a conversation about it, but I know that there were a lot of people involved with me getting removed from goals, and I think he was one of them.
Wow. So let's take a step back for a second. So 2018 is when he won, right? That's when you guys won the Olympia. So talk about that prep. You know, what did you guys do differently for him to win? Because prior to that, he had a jaw broken, right? He had placed fifth, and you know. And obviously, he went against Phil Heath. He beat Phil on the stage. So, what were the key elements that you implemented that made him a champion?
Now, when he took fifth, not only did he have a broken jaw, he also had ulcers that he had to have emergency surgery with, and still.
I heard about that. I heard about the ulcers. Yeah.
Right. That was true. Some people think that was fake. That was actually true. He actually had several blood transfusions, and he actually had internal bleeding. He actually could have died. He came back from those two things: a broken jaw. And the broken jaw and the hernias, and not the hernias, the ulcers, to actually take fifth in the world. So I knew we were onto something. And it basically was just training like it was 1973. It was just very few machines, and just every day try to deplete, take everything out of him. And Chris Aceto would adjust the protocol and adjust the diet daily. So basically, it wasn't that hard. It was basically just push him extremely hard, which he wasn't done before. So when I first acquired Dexter and I first acquired Sean, I did an interview with Dave Berlay, And I said, he is going to beat Phil. This was 2017. I said, he's going to beat. And everybody was like, oh my God, how can you say that? I said, Sean was never trained to beat Phil. He was never trained to beat Phil. He was always trained for second. He was trained for third. He was trained for not, that's not how, so you understand, I was around the best in the world. I know what top tier training is, and what Sean was doing wasn't that. Nothing against Charles, nothing against anybody else, just what I saw these greats do, that wasn't it. So I knew if I turned the switch and really pushed Sean, I knew he would win it, and I trusted Chris Aceto to do his part, so it was pretty easy for him to win the Mr. Olympia contest. And also, people often do this. So this is something that maybe your young viewers, and this is something even top bodybuilders should understand. It's a bodybuilding show, but not really. Really, it's a talent contest. So what people do with Phil, what they did with Dorian, what they did with Ronnie, they always try to beat Ronnie, or they try to beat Dorian, or they try to beat Phil. It's not a competition of you and Phil. See, Sean didn't beat Phil. Sean beat himself. Phil didn't beat his Phil. Phil lost to himself. That wasn't Phil's best look. That was Sean's best look. Judges want to see change. If it's a talent show and you're a singer, why would you get up there and try to rap? If you're a rapper, why be a singer? So they were trying to get Sean bigger and bigger and bigger when his strength is what? Symmetry, hardness. Don't copy Phil, beat Sean, and that's how he won. Phil was actually bamboozled. I knew exactly what he was gonna do. I knew how he was gonna look, and Phil's nickname is Mr. Saturday Night. So Hani, his trainer, pumps him up even more with more carbs, and he extends his gut even more. So instead of us going bigger to catch up with Phil, something we never could do, why don't we pull down and not make it a arm contest, make it a good posing contest, don't make it a most muscular, make it an ab contest, make it a quad contest. And that's why Sean won. Sean was the best Sean you had ever seen, and Phil was one of the worst Phils you had ever seen. That's why. When you can't win the argument, change the argument.
Well, Phil actually made an argument after he lost that he considered that he beat him in every pose. The back, the side, the chest, everything, except for the stomach, where he had a hernia surgery, or he is dealing with that issue. And that's what he believes that's what made him lose. When you hear that statement, he said he beat him in every mandatory pose. You don't agree with that?
Maybe he did beat him in every pose. Maybe he did. But when you leave it up to the judges, you have Mr. Olympia. He doesn't beat you in every pose. He smashes you in every pose. When Ronnie, he smashed his competition. Jay, he smashed his competition. You can't beat them. You have to smash them. Just like boxing. You have to knock the champ out. You have to knock him out. So he may have beat Sean, but did Phil beat Phil? No, that wasn't the best Phil. That was the best Sean. So therefore, you lose.
Did you know after Friday prejudging that Sean was going to win?
I knew 10 weeks before we walked on the stage he was going to lose. I actually made a live video telling everybody after prejudging. You could feel it in the air that Sean had won. So the question was this. He won. So a lot of people, there's been a lot of controversial decisions, but a lot of controversial decisions. But thing is like this, will they give it to him? Sean was so far ahead. The crowd was so hyped. Phil lost his composure. And I knew what Hani was going to do. He was going to extend that gut even more. But it's worked before for them. It's worked it worked 7 times. So let's pump him up. Let's get him bigger. And let's do a lot of most musculars and pump the crowd up. So I told Sean, when he goes into that most muscular, don't do it. There's no way you're going to beat him in a most muscular. When he does that, stand back and look at him like he's a child. And that's when Phil fell apart. Actually, Phil was bamboozled. He was bamboozled. He was out-conditioned, but more than that, Sean commanded the stage. he let you know he was the star attraction, and everyone felt it, and everyone believed it, and he won. The only person that didn't believe it was Phil, because he's saying, I did everything right. My arm is better, my leg is better, but your package isn't better because you didn't beat Phil. That's what you have to tell. They have to, you have to beat yourself in these shows. You're only as good as your last presentation.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, Phil told me that basically after the Friday night, they told him that, you know, he heard from somebody. Somebody told Hani or the judges or something like that that mm-hmm. you know, he's going, that Sean is probably going to win. So he had that already on Saturday on his mind, that there's a big chance of him losing, actually.
Right, and probably that affected his condition even more. You never tell anybody that. If you go back and replay it, you can see Phil came out with defeat all over his body. He came out with desperation. He's trying to pump the crowd. He's trying to improv. Sean came out there like, I won. I know I won. Let's just get the formalities over with so I can go home.
So how soon after the victory, obviously it was a great moment in your career and his career, you know, it's a great, you know, obviously he defeated a champion, Phil, you know, many regarded him as an unbeatable champion, you know, to be honest with you. Phil was so dominant for so many years. But how soon after the victory did you and Sean had your fallout, basically?
Well, we never had a fallout. We never had an argument. We had a discussion over payment. Because you understand, I'm a guru that I believe in getting paid. And I had heard that Sean wasn't going to come back to me next year. Wasn't upset about it, but Sean started kind of dissing himself from me right after the show. I mean, right after. We had lunch. Months went by. I asked him about payment. He paid me what I asked for. I don't think he really wanted to, but that's just my opinion. We went on tour, and we didn't say three words to each other all on tour. So I pretty much knew that I wouldn't be training him anymore.
And then he went back to Charles Glass?
No. What I've heard from one of the people, that they had already had a plan, even before Sean won, for he was going to go back to Charles. That him and Dexter was going to go back to Charles. I got a whiff of that before.
But it's confusing to me because why change the winning formula? Because Charles training before, right? He didn't win the Olympia with Charles. I'm just saying. I'm not trying to disrespect Charles. What I'm saying is, why change the winning formula? You know what I mean? I don't understand.
Men fight over one or two things. What do they fight over? What are wars waged over? One or two things. It's money and women. We weren't competing for women. So it had to be money. Maybe if I wouldn't have requested payment, maybe I still would be there. But I lost a lot of respect for, because I always thought Sean was a really intelligent person. And just like you said, most top bodybuilders, they would have won the show that no one thought they could win. They wouldn't break the formula. He broke the formula. I don't think that was very intelligent. I just don't think that was really smart.
Did you ever confront him about it? Like, what's happening? Why are you doing
that? That guy can go, he can have anybody train him whoever, whenever he wants to. He wants to go another route. If he wants to go back to Charles, let him do that. But then every day that goes by and I don't see him beating the condition that we put together, I lose more respect for him. So if Sean came to me today and asked me to train him, I wouldn't. Because I think that was dumb to even leave in the first place.
So what is your take on 2019 Olympia and Brandon Curry's win and his performance there?
Okay, when I was in the audience at 2018, I was sitting right by Brandon's wife. So it's weird. We always end up really close to one another. And I told her he was next to win it. Didn't know anything about Sean, didn't know anything like that. Brandon had been knocking at the door. So, yes, I think it's a great victory. Also, Brandon has done what few have done. He won the Arnold and the Olympia in the same year. It's in the same year. That's usually you can only peak like that for one show, one time a year. He wins both shows. So I think he earned that victory. And anybody that puts a blemish on him, I think, you know, shame on you. Give that man his props. And he's been winning, and he's been knocking at the door, and he is getting better, and he will continue to get better.
In your opinion, do you think if that year Sean was competing, do you think it would have been the same outcome, or do you think Sean would have defeated him?
If I trained Sean, of course, he would have won it 3 more years. No, I'm just being honest. He would have won it 3 more years. I was onto something, and we were onto something. We had a great team. There's no way that anybody would have beat him, and I think we would have won. If I wouldn't train him and it was left, maybe Sean would have took second, or he would have took third. That's what I believe.
What was your strategy for Sean after he won the first one? Like, next year, what was your plan to make him bigger? What was the plan to... Because you say you got to improve, right, every year. You got to show at least a little bit. So what was going to be the strategy?
I purposely left body parts lagging. Purposely left the triceps and arms lagging. I purposely did that. I purposely left the lower back. So my job was to be a little bit harder, but fill in and refine the triceps, arms total, get more cut and size on the arms, and get the lower back in there. And how I was going to do that, I was going to do a tricep bicep bump once a week, and a full train another part of the week, and then we would implement the deadlifts in there to get the lower back stronger, but just enough weight to not expand the waist. I had the plan already set.
Wow, that's incredible, man. It's like science, you know what I mean? It's like,
of course, you have to leave a little in the tank for next year. Like I said, you have to beat yourself. So I knew what the flaws were in his body. I knew what the flaws were in his body, and all I had to do was actually get those better, and then it would have been the same outcome. There was nobody on there. Maybe Hadi Chupin would have gave us an actual run for our money, but a lot of times you don't get to the Olympia first time and just win that. But I think Sean would have easily won the Olympia, and I think Steve Weinberger even said the same thing. He would have won in 2019.
What do you think in general? Because I think after Brandon won, he's been criticized, like you mentioned, by a few legends actually in the sport, right? They mm-hmm. said that if he was competing back then, he wouldn't place top six. And then the whole conversation started whether the level of competitors was actually much better in the 90s than now. It kind of created a dialogue, you know what I mean? Like, what do you think about that? Were the actual competitors much, much better and actually more conditioned in the 90s than right now?
Let's do it like this. You can go back and you can do your internet search. If you look at the 98, 99 European Grand Prix, any of those guys could have won Miss Olympia. Those guys were phenomenal. Ronnie Coleman, 96, 97, 98. There's no one that can tell me or tell anyone that these guys were not phenomenal bodybuilders. The thing is, they would have, if Brandon was in that time period, he would have emulated the bodies at that time, and he would have been in the mix. This is a different era. These guys, like now, you need straighter glutes. You have to have fibers in your glutes now. This is what you need. But back then, fibers in the glute, that wasn't a mandatory thing. If you didn't have fibers in the glute, that wasn't what they were looking for. You didn't have to be 260 or 270. But if that was the criteria, they would have. But the bodybuilders there, they were the elite bodybuilders. You know, a pro. When you saw a pro bodybuilder on the street, that really meant something. You meet a pro bodybuilder now, sometimes you're surprised that they're pro. They have to tell you that they're pro. So when you saw a pro bodybuilder, you knew that guy was pro. You just by looking at him, he was pro. You could tell that level of fitness, that level like that. And let's take Dexter Jackson. He was from that era. Right? He's still winning shows to this day. So that should tell you how good those guys are. This guy is still winning shows. So it's easy to verbalize and talk something away or try to talk something away, but just do your research. You can go to the Nationals of 2000 or 99 and 98. Those guys are phenomenal. They're phenomenal. Those are phenomenal bodybuilders. So, you know, we sit back and like with me, I wasn't a pro bodybuilder. I didn't compete much, but I don't think anybody trains as hard as me. We all guys, we always say that. So that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Big Ramy? I want to get your opinion on it because, you know, it seems like he went through so many different coaches. Mm-hmm. He trained in different countries and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
And actually, a lot of people thought that he was going to beat Phil eventually, right? Because they had some battles too between them. And he's a big guy, a big frame, you know. What do you think prevented him from winning?
Oh, he's not hard enough. He's not missing any body parts. He's definitely not missing mass. He's just not hard enough. Now, the question is this. Why isn't he hard enough? He's had some of the best coaches out there. He had Yoda. He had Chris Aceto. He had I think he had Dennis even for a while. These are phenomenal coaches. So why didn't he do it? Sometimes I think the answer to that question might be in his bathroom mirror. He needs to look at himself, and maybe he needs to look at himself and let go and let somebody dial him in. I don't think it's these coaches. He's had the top coaches, the best coaches in the world. And it's only one problem with him. He's just too big. So unfortunately, now he's running out of time.
You think he missed his everybody has like a peak, you know what I mean? And when they at their prime. Do you think he missed that?
His peak? Meaning like far as his body and body parts? Yes. But can he still win it? Yes. But that window is closing very fast.
What if you train him?
If I trained him, I would lock him in one room, and then he would be on the treadmill for hours at a time. He would superset, he would giant set, and I would pull him down about 12 to 15 pounds, and I think he would have everybody at the Olympic would have hurt feelings if I trained him. But I don't think Rami would go through what I would put him through. I don't think so. He's had the best coaches. He's had the best trainers. He's moved all over the world. He doesn't have financial restraint. Something has to be him not letting go. It has to be him. I don't know him, but that's what I would say.
How intense are your trainings, man, exactly? How like, what do you take people through in the gym?
I try to get my training philosophy is I try to take them to the edge, but not over the edge, every single day I can. You have to understand, the era that I came from, my training partners, if they didn't win the show, they lost their contract. There was no social media to supplement your income. So if this guy is fifth and you usually beat that guy and that guy beats you, that's it. They had either three month period contracts or month to month contracts. So that would be the end of the story. There was no 2 year, 4 year, 5 year contracts. So they trained and they dieted like that was it. And every show was the last show. So that's in my mindset. There is no tomorrow. There is no t-shirt money. There is no hat money. There is no food contract. There is no shoe contract. Those guys primarily got there. They had a media contract and a supplement contract. That was it. So if you're under those restraints, you're going to train a lot different. Everything is very, very serious. And I think guys now that things are not as serious because they have multiple revenue sources. I don't think Rami needs to win the Olympia. It's a want. Ronnie Coleman needed to win the Olympia. He needed that. So I think that's the thing. It's hunger. It's like rap. The first rappers, the first two albums are great. After that, they're garbage because they have millions of dollars. And that's the more the money they get, the less the song gets. That's just how it goes. Boxers the same way. The guy's hungry, living in his mom's basement. He'll knock you out. Now he's in the mansion. And he gets knocked out in the first round. It's the same story wherever you go.
That's crazy because you would think, you would think basically once you have the means, the money, you don't have to get a second job, third job. You know what I mean? You can just focus on that one specific goal. You know what I mean?
No, you're not as hungry, brother. You're not as hungry anymore. You got five streams of revenue. You're making $500,000 or $1 million a year, and then you don't get the $400,000 from Olympia. Okay, I still have $1 million coming in this year. It's still the same thing. You can't hold your own head underwater. You can't. You're gonna come up for air. You need a trainer to push you through the darkness. You need that, and you need to be hungry. You have to be hungry. You have to want it. See, bodybuilding is not like football. You know, you go to football practice, and then you can go to McDonald's afterwards, a Burger King, or whatever. You know, it doesn't have to. Every now and then, you got a weight thing, and then so you pull no hot wings that week. Fine. But bodybuilding, if you don't sleep enough, it affects your training. If you eat the wrong food, it affects your training. If you miss the protocol, it affects your training. Everything affects your training. Everything affects your outcome. So it's a whole different sport. I got into this sport because it was the hardest thing I had ever done. It's harder than baseball, harder than track, harder than lacrosse. It's harder than every other sport because it's 24 hours a day. It never stops. It never stops. If you're not training, you should be eating. If you're not sleeping, you should be eating. If you're not doing that, you're cooking your food, prepping and getting ready for the next day. It's 24, 7 days a week up until that show. You miss a meal, instantly you see it.
Do you think Phil, if he makes a comeback on Olympia stage, do you think he's still a very dangerous opponent?
Of course, Phil's he's always going to be dangerous. Phil's always going to be dangerous. I think, you know, when you lose like that, and this is why it's really hard for bodybuilders to make a comeback. When you take a defeat like that, it's really hard to get your mindset back into winning again. It takes a lot. It takes a lot to get your mind back. So if he can regain his composure, he can get his team to stop telling him you won. If he accepts that he lost, he'll win it. If they keep telling him that you won, he has no reason to become better if he already won. So he has to fix whatever issue it is, and he has to be the best Phil they had ever seen. Now, I remind you, Brandon got better. Hadi Chupin is better. Sean is definitely going to come back better. So the people that he's going to go against, they're not there. Those people he's going against, they're better. So Phil has to be better. But I think he has enough gas in the tank to win it. I believe that. Totally believe that.
Do you think that year 2018, because he was dealing with the stomach issues because of the hernia, right? Do you think he should have said that one out? Like, if you was training, would you give him an opinion? Like, just don't compete that year.
No. It's on that. Those elite bodybuilders like that, they have to. It's, you know, if you give them a break, it has to be a really much needed break. There were things in that program that probably could have been changed where he could have controlled his stomach better, controlled his waist better. It was basically. He thought he could get away with doing the same thing he had done before. It wasn't that Hani made a huge mistake. Hani did exactly what I thought he was going to do, and that just put a spotlight ball on the problem. He tried to fill him up too much and fill him out. His fill is always flat during the prejudging, but he comes back really full. But in that thing, he fills out too much, and his gut extends. So it was just basically this mix-up or a faux pas, whatever you might say.
Where would you put Phil? Where would you rank him, you know, out of all-time, you know, greats? Where would you put him in that category?
Oh, definitely one of the greats. I would have to put him... Well, Ronnie's number one.
That's the greatest of all time, in your opinion, Ronnie.
Of all time, no one's even close to him. He's half Michael Jordan, half LeBron. There's nobody better than Ronnie. There never be another Ronnie. So let's just put that right there. Dexter is a longevity. No one's ever going to win that many shows. He is Mr. Consistent. Those two things happen like that. So where I would, my favorite, I would have to put Ronnie Coleman at number one, Flex Wheeler.
Number two.
Not from all the shows he won, but everybody who's inspired. There is not one top bodybuilder right now that doesn't have pictures of Flex in his phone and look at them from time to time. That is the goal. That is the standard. That is what you want to achieve. So Ronnie number one, Flex number two, Dorian for his hardness number three, and Phil right there. Phil right there, because Phil to me is actually a hybrid between Ronnie and Flex Wheeler. He's a combination of the two. If Ronnie Coleman and Flex would have had a baby, it would be Phil Heath.
You know, it's actually good that you actually put him so high on the list, because so many people discredited him for so many years. I never understood that, because to me, like, he was the modern day, you know what I mean? That seven Olympians, that takes a lot, you know what I mean? And for some reason, so many people hated on him, and I never understood why. I mean, just because... They don't like him personally, but you know what I mean? Like, we're talking about objectively, you know what I mean?
They didn't know him. It's like people, Phil probably thinks I hate him. I don't hate him, but I have to have some animosity towards him because I want to beat him.
Well, that's understandable, of course.
I want to beat him. I can't love Phil and train somebody to beat him. So, but you understand, you got everybody nipping at your heels for 7 years. It's hard to walk around and be like that. Ronnie, you know, that's why, of all time, not just for his accomplishments on stage, that most of the time he won those Olympics, he had a full-time job, he's still relevant to this day, and he was able to be Ronnie and people not hate him. Or when people attacked him, he was able to put that. Everybody can't do that. So when Phil's getting attacked and ripped apart, of course he's going to have a little animosity towards other people. Like, I read what you said about me, and now you're smiling in my face. It's really hard. Like, Sean... Nothing affects Sean. Like, nothing affects him. Nothing you say. He doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't do that. But Dexter, he'll be mad privately, but publicly, he knows how to put on that persona that everything is okay. Phil just wasn't able to do that. It would leak out. But for 7 years, he had everybody nipping at his heels. And then if they couldn't do it on stage, they tried to do it verbally. And to me, that's disrespectful.
I think also Phil was the first champion of this generation to be like the first guy in bodybuilding that was kind of became very popular on social media too. Like Ronnie was before social media, all these guys before right. social media, you know what I'm saying? But he was a champion during the whole explosion of social media, like Instagram and all that. And that's when, you know, obviously in social media, people talk all the time, you know?
Right. It was just people give their opinion all the time and, you know, like that. But, you know, also, Phil, he looked really good. He's very charismatic. He's educated. He's well-spoken. He's a really good representative of the sport. But I think that some people can't handle the negativity and the pressure. They internalize it a little bit more than others. And I think sometimes that way make him, you know, feel a little like he has to retaliate or say something he shouldn't say.
What do you think about the rivalry between Phil Heath and Kai Greene? You know, they had three battles on Olympia stage when Kai came in second, and then Kai stopped competing after that, you know, or he wasn't given a permission to compete, whatever. But at those 3 years, how did you feel about the rivalry? And do you think, because a lot of people like consider that Kai being robbed at least one of them. Do you think that, or do you feel like Phil definitely beat him?
See, the thing about Kai, which I think he's a great bodybuilder, great entertainer, great businessman. I don't see how you can compare Kai to anybody on that stage. His body is so different than anyone on that stage. It's really hard to compare him like that. I mean, he moves like no one. He looks like no one. Everything is just different. So it's really hard to compare him. I would not want to judge Kai against anybody because he either wins or he's last. I don't see where you can place him because his body is just so different. So far as the rivalry between the two, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I've gone to the Olympia with a lot of top people. And with Sean was the only time that we came back a victory. That's a long ride home when you lose. It's a long ride home. It doesn't feel good to lose that show. And it doesn't feel good to lose when that person didn't even touch you. It doesn't feel good to lose and this person basically worked harder than you and outperformed you. And everybody in that car, everybody on that plane, we're all losers. So yes, there's going to be a rivalry there. And if Kai he didn't see any emotion in him, he didn't really want it. You're going to be hurt. If you lose, you're going to be hurt. Like I said before, this is not like you practice football practice and you have football practice for 3 hours and you go home and, you know, this is bodybuilding. You dedicate the whole offseason and then 15 weeks, every single moment is dedicated to that show. And then you lose. And that's the best you ever looked and you still lose. That's not a good feeling. I understand the rivalry. I don't agree with it. But Kai has to feel that way to try to come back and beat him. And Phil has to have that anger to keep everybody off. You can't cut somebody's throat and say, excuse me, are you okay? When you swing the knife, you got to swing to kill. So I understand the anger. I understand the animosity. I mean, I understand when you put somebody's face on your refrigerator and, you know, you have to, every bite is to take this guy out. You can't be, hey, man, how you doing? How's everything? How's the wife? Hey, come over. Let's play Nintendo. No, you have to try to kill this guy. So I understand animosity. I use that in the gym with my clients.
Have you trained recently at Regan Grimes?
Yes, Regan came out right before the quarantine. He stayed with me for a few weeks, trained, teach him techniques, and he goes back. I'm not his trainer. I'm not his coach. I'm basically like a guy. He comes and he gets different exercises. We share exercises. We work really well together. Like we try to come up with new exercises and stuff like that. And I think Regan is my favorite bodybuilder right now.
I was going to ask you, how do you feel about him and his future in bodybuilding? Because he went from open, he went to, I believe, classic division. Now he's back in open, right?
He's back in open right now. Yeah. He will win the Olympia for sure. He will win the Olympia. He just needs a little bit more time. And thing about Regan, I think, you know, Regan has this huge following on social media. He has multiple contracts. And this is somebody that the young people should get to know and should follow him. This guy is a bodybuilder through and through. And if you've ever been around Regan, he has this way that he makes you want to teach him. You want to give him information. You want to see him do well. He's very respectful. He's very nice. He's a very hard worker. And, you know, he's just a really all-around great guy.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. He's a great guy. Now, a couple more questions for you. So I want to get your opinion on Synthol use. When I interviewed Milos, you know, who's all about, you know, enhancements, he said he's all about that, man. But he's strongly against Synthol use because he said he almost died from it, basically.
Okay.
So obviously there's levels to Synthol use, you know, there's levels to it, I understand that. But what is your take on it? Do you think is a play, like if you have to balance certain muscle group, like the bicep or, you know what I mean, certain muscles, like to balance them out, do you think it has a place in bodybuilding, or do you think it should never be used?
Well, it has a place in bodybuilding. It has a place in bodybuilding, but I think it's abused. Just like insulin. I think they're both abused. So people don't try to fill out a certain body part, meaning like this arm is a fourth of an inch too small. They try to say, hey, let's put 2 inches on each arm or two each muscle groups. Right, and compounded that with the insulin, and that's why you don't see triceps with cross striations anymore. And that's why you don't see shoulders with full striations. And the insulin is why you don't see chest with full striated. I'm not talking about little striations right here. I'm talking about striations that go all the way over to the front delt. That's because of insulin. That's because, and then same thing with Synthol. You just, people, I call it pin happy. Guys get a little pin happy and they keep going and they keep going and they keep going. And when you're by yourself, you know, when you're in an apartment with your girlfriend and she shoots your arm up, it looks okay. But when you stand next to an arm that's 22 inches that has no Synthol in it or less, it exploits you for when you go, oh, I went too far with this.
But it's also very dangerous, right? I mean, some people like experience terrible near-death experiences, you know? If you injected the wrong way.
I've been in the room a few times and people have passed out. It can get out of control. Insulin and Synthol. Insulin, you can actually put yourself into a diabetic coma if you.
No, absolutely. Of course, I hear so many stories about that.
Yeah, it can happen.
You know, it's interesting. You know, bodybuilding, right? Like, it's in many ways synonymous with health. You know, health and fitness.
Right.
But in many ways, it's synonymous with very dangerous and extreme sport. You know. How would you explain what bodybuilding actually is? Like, if somebody was to come to you and say, give me a definition of what is bodybuilding, you know, and on a competitive level, I'm talking about not fitness. I'm talking about competitive bodybuilding. How would you describe it?
Well, I love bodybuilding, and even the part that the protocols and the enhancement and the tanning of the skin and the massage, the deep tissue massage, the cupping, all this stuff. I love the whole aspect of the sport, and it's constantly evolving. And we're constantly pushing the limits to see how can we get these athletes to perform better. But there's always going to be rebels out there that take it a little bit too far. And unfortunately, those rebels put a black eye on the sport for all of us. So you've never seen any name that I've been linked to. Ulcers had nothing to do with bodybuilding, had nothing to do with anything. That was just him internalizing his life pressures. It had nothing to do with anything he did for his bodybuilder. Dexter is 52, 51 years old, and he can outperform 21-year-olds in the gym. So the ones that I associate with are respectful and they do things the right way, and they are the icons of the sport. Jay Cutler, he still works out every day. He looks phenomenal. Look, he could turn it up and compete tomorrow. Kevin LaRone, same thing. So there's a lot of people out there, but there are some rogues out there that push a little bit too far, and I think they give bodybuilding a bad name for everybody.
Is it also that like some people can react differently to certain things? You know, like for instance, maybe some people can just genetically handle way more than others, and you know.
Of course.
I think it's a big reason too for. You know.
Yeah, of course. And then certain protocols don't work right. It may work great for this guy, but this person, it just doesn't work well for him. Or this person may have a propensity for high blood pressure. And then he goes on a moderate cycle and his blood pressure shoots up to 200 and he ends up blowing his kidneys out. He was probably going to get high blood pressure anyway, and the steroids or the enhancement may have expedited that. But it's all in the person. But yeah, people have to understand that the people that the top 20 in the world, these are genetic freaks, hard work, and enhancement. It's just not enhancement and hard work like that. These guys are genetic freaks.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chris. So I want to conclude this interview by, again, you know, kind of like going back to the Charles Glass situation. You know, he's a very respected guy. You're a very respected guy. You know, I feel like industry is big enough for the both of you. You know, how can really this situation be resolved? You know, because the animosity thing, of course, it's a problem. It's very messed up that you got kicked out of the gym, Gold's Gym.
How can this be resolved?
You know, no, it's messed up that they kicked you out of the gym.
I don't think so. I've made 75% more money when I left Gold's Gym.
Okay. No, but just the idea of the fact that, you know.
It didn't affect me at all.
Congratulations.
I really don't see how it's going to be resolved. I don't really see that. I don't see. And not that I harbor any resentment. I just don't want to be friends with a snake. I'm not going to have a pet rattlesnake. I don't see that. Charles and I would call him Uncle Charles. I really revered this guy in very high esteem. I mean, I don't think that just the way I was treated, like I was treated worse after Sean won the Olympia than before. I could get the hazing before. I forget you don't know what you're doing. I forget, you know, I can forgive. We don't like the way you're training him. But once he wins, you have to say, okay, he was right. You don't expedite and you don't campaign to have my livelihood taken away. So to answer your question, how can it be resolved? How about an apology? How about an apology? How about the truth? That's the only way. I'm not gonna befriend Charles or try to basically placate to him when I did absolutely nothing wrong. And another thing about Charles is, I don't like the way he gets all the credit for discovering me. If anybody should get the credit, it's Chris Cormier. Chris Cormier is the one that taught me dieting. Chris Aceto taught me dieting. Charles didn't teach me very much. It was the combination of Chris Aceto and Chris Cormier. That's why I'm sitting right here. Those two icons in the sport. Charles just gets the credit for it.
I hear you, man. Speaking of a Gold's Gym, have you heard that they filed for bankruptcy? Or they're about to file for bankruptcy?
I heard they filed for bankruptcy. Yeah. My thoughts on that is it's just a business move. The Gold's Gym, of course, it's Gold's Gym corporate. So the gyms that aren't making any money, they'll liquidate those. The government will step in and pay the bills that they don't want to pay. It's just a business move. It won't affect Gold's Gym business whatsoever. But Boise, Idaho goes or back alley goes, that gym may not be there anymore because there were too many Gold's Gyms to begin with. But it's just the way it is. It's just a business tack. It's a perfect opportunity for them not to pay bills that they don't want to pay. They're not going to liquidate all the goals. It's not going to happen. They'll get rid of X amount of clubs, 50 clubs or 100 clubs. They'll be gone. Only the corporates, the privately owned goals, the franchise goals, they'll still be around. So it's just a business move.
And then lastly, what's next for you, man? What can we expect from Psycho Fitness? Which one of your clients is going to win the Olympia next?
I think the next person that I am linked to that wins Olympia, that will be Regan Grimes. When this whole thing is over, I'm going to fly out to Canada and we're going to get him win a couple of shows this year, get qualified. And then within the next few years, I think he'll win the Olympia. And then I want to open my own gym here in California, train the old school way. My principles, my thought process, and just go from there. So everything is good.
Sounds good, man. Chris, thank you so much for your time. It's a great interview. We spoke for an hour and 15 minutes.
All right.
A lot of knowledgeable things, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much for taking your time, man. We're gonna put it out in segments on Generation Iron, okay?
Perfect.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, Mike. Great meeting.
Thank you.
visit GenerationIron.com for even more GI exclusive content on all things bodybuilding, fitness, combat, and strength sports. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are downloaded.